Ekhatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Hey there, curious learners. Welcome back. Have you ever looked at the sheer chaos, or maybe the just mind-boggling change of the 20th century, and wished someone could just hand you a map?
Yeah, like a way to connect all those seemingly disconnected dots, the wars, the crashes, the cultural shifts, make it make sense somehow.
Exactly. Well, that's precisely what we're trying to do today in this deep dive.
And we're using a truly monumental work as our compass, Eric Hobsbawm's The Age of Extremes.
Right. This isn't just another history book. It's a profound lens for understanding how the 20th century became such a roller coaster. Devastation, sure, but also ideological struggle and, surprisingly, unprecedented progress, too.
We're talking about that specific period he famously called the short 20th century. So that's 1914 to 1991.
And honestly, if you want to understand why our world is the way it is right now, global politics, daily habits, the lot getting inside Hobsbawm's thinking on this era is, well, it's pretty essential.
It really gives you a powerful mental framework, doesn't it? Helps you cut through the noise and maybe see the underlying patterns.
So who was this brilliant mind, Eric Hobsbawm? His life was, incredibly intertwined with the century he chronicled.
Absolutely. Born in Alexandria, Egypt in 1917, which is, the year of the Russian Revolution, his life mirrored the century's drama.
It's fascinating when you think about it. Imagine living through the rise of Nazism as a young man in Vienna and Berlin, then moving to Britain.
Yeah. He was a British academic, Jewish Austrian background, and famously a lifelong member of the Communist Party of Great Britain, though it's important to say a critical member.
Right. And for Hobsbawm, that Marxist framework, it wasn't like a blinker. He saw it as a tool, a specific lens for analyzing class, economics, the sort of material forces driving history.
And his credentials, well, they were top notch. Fellow of the British Academy, the American Academy, taught for decades at Birkbeck University of London.
Mm-hmm. And The Age of Extremes is really the capstone, isn't it? The final part of his huge four-volume history of the modern world.
It is. But what I think makes his perspective really distinctive is that he was kind of a participant observer.
Yeah. Not just a detached scholar in the archives, right? He actually lived through a lot of this stuff.
Exactly. And you have to think that gave his work this unique blend. Analytical rigor, yes, but also this personal weight, this gravitas. It allowed him to synthesize just vast amounts of information into this compelling, really internationalist story.
So let's unpack his central argument then. The Age of Extremes. What's the core idea?
Okay, so the main thesis is that this short 20th century, 1914 to 1991, is one single coherent historical period. A drama, almost.
Defined by what, primarily?
Defined by a massive global ideological struggle. And he argues that the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution was the pivotal event. It set the whole century's agenda.
So the rise of Soviet communism as this global alternative to market capitalism is key.
Absolutely. And its collapse in 1991 for Hobsbawm, that marks the definitive end of that agenda, the end of that specific historical story. You can only understand the whole arc through that lens, he contends.
Okay. And he breaks this journey down, right, into three parts.
Yes, three distinct phases. First, the Age of Catastrophe. That runs from 1914 to about 1947. Think world wars, economic collapse, the rise of fascism, just catastrophe.
Extreme stuff. But then comes something different.
Surprisingly, yes. Then we move into what he calls the Golden Age, roughly 1947 to 1973. This was, against the odds, a time of unprecedented global economic growth, massive social change, and a weird kind of stability.
Brought about by the Cold War. You mentioned that earlier.
Ironically, yes. That nuclear standoff created a kind of tense stability.
And the third part.
That's the landslide, or sometimes called the crisis decades. From about 1973 to 1991, this is where the certainties of that golden age just crumble.
Leading to economic problems, social shifts again, and eventually the collapse of the Soviet system itself.
Exactly. Leaving the world feeling pretty disoriented, searching for, what comes next.
And within this big structure, he covers so much ground. The clash of ideologies, liberalism, communism, fascism, the economy failures of pure capitalism, the successes of the mixed economy.
And what he calls the social revolution, which he argues was maybe the most fundamental change of all, how ordinary people's lives were transformed faster than ever before in history. It's really a total history approach.
Okay, let's dive a bit deeper then. That first section, the Age of Catastrophe, 1914, 1947, it kicks off with World War I.
Right. And Hobsbawm sees WWI not just as another war, but as the event that shattered the old 19th century liberal world order. And it introduced total warfare.
Meaning
war that involves entire societies, mobilizing everything, blurring the lines between soldiers and civilians, using industry for destruction on a massive scale.
And out of that chaos
comes the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
For Hobsbawm, this is the defining moment. It established this powerful, real-world alternative to capitalism. It inspired movements everywhere and just fundamentally changed the century's path.
But the chaos didn't stop there, did it?
Not at all. The interwar years, you get the plunge into the economic abyss, the Great Depression, starting in 29.
A massive failure of that classical, liberal, hands-off economic approach.
Totally. It discredited laissez-faire ideology. Democratic governments seemed, well, powerless. And into that economic and political vacuum steps, fascism, Italy, Germany.
A powerful force promising order, but based on nationalism, authoritarianism, and crucially, anti-liberal and anti-communist.
Exactly. And this whole age of catastrophe, it culminates, of course, in World War II.
Which Hobsbawm frames mainly as an ideological fight.
Yes. And he sees the alliance between the West, you know, capitalism and Soviet communism to beat fascism as, well, necessary but temporary. An unnatural alliance, he calls it.
Because the underlying antagonism was still there, ready to break out into the Cold War immediately after?
Precisely. And another huge consequence of these wars, they fatally weakened the old European colonial empires. That really set the stage for decolonization across the globe.
Okay, so that devastation leads us, surprisingly, to the Golden Age, 1947-1973. How does catastrophe breed a golden age? Seems counterintuitive.
It does. But Hobsbawm argues it was ironically structured by the Cold War. That nuclear stalemate, that bipolar world dominated by the US and USSR, it actually prevented another hot world war between major powers. It created this tense but stable international system.
And within that stability, the capitalist world had an economic miracle.
Yeah, an absolute boom. It was a mix of things. Keynesian demand management played a big role.
Which is basically government stepping in to manage the economy, right? Spending, stimulating demand, trying to avoid another depression.
Exactly. Plus, you had rapid technological innovation, really cheap energy, especially oil, and the creation of a mass consumer society. Cars, TVs, washing machines.
And this meant real improvements for ordinary people.
For many in the West, yes. Full employment was common, wages rose steadily, welfare states were built, healthcare, pensions, education. It was a kind of historic compromise, you could say, between capital and labor, partly driven by the fear of communism.
And this economic boom fuels what he calls the social revolution. What did that look like?
It was profound. Think about this. For the first time ever, most people didn't work in agriculture. Mass movement to cities. Urbanization on a huge scale.
You also get the rise of this large group of educated young people.
Right. University students, who then become the backbone of the cultural upheavals in the 1960s, and massive changes in the role of women entering the workforce, higher education in much larger numbers.
Now, he does look at the other side, too. Real socialism in the Soviet bloc.
He does. He acknowledges their achievements, industrialization, social welfare improvements from a low base, but he's also very clear about the deep systemic flaws, the lack of freedom, the economic inefficiency. They were falling further and further behind the West.
Okay, so the Golden Age shines bright, but like you said, it doesn't last.
Yeah.
What brings on the landslide, the final act from 73 to 91?
Well, it starts with a couple of big shocks. The 1973 oil crisis prices quadrupled, basically, and the end of the Bretton Woods system.
That was the post-war agreement that kept currency stable, linked to gold and the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, that system collapsed. And these things together really signaled the end of that easy post-war boom.
So the West enters the crisis decades. You get stagflation, that weird mix of stagnation and inflation.
Exactly. Plus rising unemployment, things that the Keynesian model seemed unable to fix. And this discredited Keynesianism.
Paving the way for
neoliberalism, free market ideas championed by people like Margaret Thatcher in the UK, Ronald Reagan in the US. Less government intervention, privatization, deregulation.
And while this is happening in the West, what's going on in the Soviet Union?
It's entering its terminal decline. Hobsbawm talks about Mikhail Gorbachev's reforms in the late 80s perestroika, trying to restructure the economy, and glasnost, allowing more openness.
But they didn't save the system.
Ironically, they probably accelerated its collapse. They revealed the deep problems and unleashed forces Gorbachev couldn't control.
Which leads to the fall of the Berlin Wall in 89.
A huge symbolic moment. And then the actual dissolution of the USSR in 1991. And that, for Hobsbawm, is the definitive end of the short 20th century.
Wow. And his conclusion is not exactly cheerful.
No, it's quite pessimistic, actually. He sees a world that's more globalized, more technologically advanced, sure, but also more unequal, more unstable, kind of adrift.
Because the communist alternative is gone.
Yeah, and he argues that capitalism itself kind of lost its old adversary, maybe lost its sense of purpose or direction, leaving a generation growing up in what he calls a permanent present, disconnected from the past, without clear ideologies guiding the future. It really makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does. And it's amazing how he pulls these core themes out of all that complexity. Hmm. That first one you mentioned, the short 20th century, is a coherent arc.
Yes. The idea that 1914 to 1991 isn't just random events, but a complete drama. Destruction of an old order, rise of a central conflict, its final resolution. It's such a powerful way to frame it.
It really helps make sense of things.
Yeah.
You look at global news today, and you can sort of trace the roots back, see the patterns Hobsbawm identified, instead of just noise.
And the other huge theme, the great social revolution. He really emphasizes that beyond all the politics and wars, maybe the most significant lasting change was just in how ordinary people live their daily lives.
That line is incredible.
Right.
For 80% of humanity, the Middle Ages ended in the 1950s. The death of the peasantry, urbanization, changes in family, religion, the rise of youth culture.
It's massive. You think about your grandparents' lives versus yours. Economically, socially, the speed of that change in just a couple of generations is staggering.
Then there's the dialectic of catastrophe and golden age. That's a really interesting, maybe even unsettling idea.
Yeah, how the horrors of the first half of the wars, the depression actually created the conditions for the prosperity that followed. War pushing technology, fear pushing social reforms.
It's that surprising connection. Does progress always have to come out of crisis? It's a tough question.
And finally, the limits of ideology. Hobsbawm shows this parade of grand ideas, liberalism, fascism, communism, that promised so much, rose so high, and then crashed.
Liberalism failed in the 30s, fascism defeated in 45, communism collapsed in 91. It's definitely a cautionary tale about being too certain about any single ideology. It makes you want to question assumptions.
Absolutely. And Hobsbawm's writing itself, it's not just analytical. It's powerful. He had such a way with words. Are there any particular lines or ideas that really stuck with you?
For me, it's that stark point. It was not a century of war so much as a century of massacre. That really hammers home how industrial killing and ideology made 20th century conflict different and just horrifyingly devastating. Chilling.
That is a powerful one. And reflecting that sense of disorientation at the end, there's the idea that the short 20th century ended in problems for which nobody had or even claimed to have solutions.
Yeah, that feeling of being adrift, no easy answers, unlike earlier periods where you had these big competing visions.
And just hammering home the social change again, that point about the death of the peasantry ending the Middle Ages for most people in the 1950s, it's easy to forget how recent, how dramatic that shift was.
So taking all this in, what does it mean for us, you know, listening today? How can we apply this understanding of the 20th century?
Well, one huge thing is contextualizing current global issues. So much of what's happening now, globalization, instability in certain regions, the rise of Asia, has roots in the story Hobsbawm tells.
Understanding the collapse of that old Cold War order helps explain why the 21st century feels maybe more fragmented, more unpredictable. It gives you the backstory.
Exactly. Another key takeaway is recognizing the fragility of stability that Golden Age Hobsbawm describes. It reminds us that widespread peace and prosperity aren't automatic. They depend on specific, often fragile political and economic setups.
Right. It pushes you to be less complacent, maybe. More aware of the risks and the things that underpin our own relative stability today. What are those fragile arrangements now?
Good question. And thirdly, I think it's about guarding against historical amnesia. Hobsbawm was worried about generations growing up in a permanent present, cut off from the past.
And this book is like an antidote to that. Understanding the sacrifices, the terrible mistakes, but also the unexpected successes of the 20th century. It helps us make better choices now.
It teaches you that the world wasn't destined to be this way. It was built, and crucially, it can be unbuilt or rebuilt differently.
So reflecting on this deep dive, what surprised you most, or what's the main thing you take away from Hobsbawm's perspective?
For me, it was how well he delivered on that promise of making it a coherent story. taking this incredibly complex, violent, revolutionary century and actually mapping it out, you really do leave with a better mental framework for understanding how we got here. It's quite a feat.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the lasting insight for me is that sense of constant change, historical contingency, how systems and ideas that seem totally invincible in one era, communism, even the post-war welfare state consensus, just crumbled in the next.
It really teaches you about the impermanence of things, the need for adaptability.
And that final point he makes about capitalism becoming triumphant, but maybe rudderless, losing its old rival and facing new problems without that old defining conflict, that stays with you.
Definitely. Which leads us, as we wrap up, to that provocative thought Hobsbawm leaves us with. If the short 20th century was defined by that big ideological fight and that fight is over, what's defining our century? What new ideologies or maybe organizing principles are emerging now to fill that space? What maps are we drawing?
Something to keep thinking about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akashra Foundation.